Hi there, and welcome to our podcast, Mindfulness at Work. I'm Cara Pollard.
Hi, and welcome to the Mindfulness at Work podcast. We try to talk about anything that's mindful or working or not. And so today I have an expert here who certainly knows all about what works and what doesn't. Nicole from Empowered Kids TV is here with me today, and Nicole comes to us from Manchester, England, and she talks to people, experts from around the world. She really has a great network, and I'm so pleased and honored to have her here sharing with us all of her knowledge. So welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Cara. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us. Can you tell me what Empowered Kids TV is?
Yeah, so Empowered Kids TV is a parenting media and educational platform. And we're on a mission to help families reduce the conflict in their homes, heal, and learn how to connect more deeply. Because I think that's the avenue for giving us the opportunity to have kids that are open and even eager for our guidance.
Wow. That's it in a nutshell. I love how you phrase that. And what could be more important than what you offer to parents during this particular time? I mean, I think it was always important, and always one of the most important jobs that you have on earth is how you raise your children. But right now, we're seeing so many holes in our parenting ability within society, whether it's governmental, whether it's educational, whether it's just plain old care. They're all at a precipice of being in high conflict right now. So, Nicole, why don't you tell me about some of the guests that you've hosted on Empowered Kids TV so that you could bring their message to the world so graciously as you do?
So we've had guests, for me, what I like to call the real experts. So early on in my parenting journey, I fell prey to what the media made popular. And really thought that the people on TV were the experts because they were on TV and they had books. I know I did. And you would think somebody with a research background would know better, but I did. Until I saw patterns within my kids that made me want to find what was really working. Mm-hmm. And so I turned to people that were doing real research. So people that either had years of longitudinal study from a scientific perspective, or they were doing coaching for years with a huge track record of success. Not success in the moment while the camera is on, but success that you could go back and look at 5, 10, 15 years down the road. So we've had people like Bruce Lipton looking at epigenetics. We've had neuroscientists on. We've had Dan Siegel. We've had Byron Katie. We've had, obviously, Dr. Shefali from a conscious parenting perspective. We've had Maura Neuf diving deeper into neuroscience. Let's see who else. We've had Laura Markham. The list goes on and on.
Yes.
I've had a real, I think it's a real blessing to be able to work with these experts along my own parenting journey and ask questions that were coming up for me, and I know that were burning for other parents. Questions that we couldn't find answers to in books or on audio tapes or YouTube videos. But I think questions that help us get that insight we need to begin to take the actions. And for me, it's all about what actions can you take? What habits can you develop in your family so that you can make that step change?
Wow. You've had some amazing, impressive experts. And I am so passionate about parenting and coaching that some of those people are, you know, my biggest mentors, and I love all of their messages, and they do base it on scientific research. So it's not just a one time in the moment, oh, try this, it might work. It's so much deeper. And I think most parents are a little afraid and have fear and maybe a little trepidation because it seems arduous, right? To begin the work of self-discovery and thinking about our thoughts, it seems so overwhelming. But yet, what's the irony here is that we're all overwhelmed just in our daily tasks, just by paying attention to the details and putting out the fires. So if we could start to pause and look at our inner world and landscape and figure some things out based on research, everything becomes easier. Not easy. Nothing has ever done. The work has never arrived. But we have inside knowledge almost about what works, what doesn't. And so I find when I'm working with parents, sometimes I say, I can't even tell you why it works. I've just learned that it works. I've learned for myself. I've learned for my clients. So please just try it and come back and tell me. And they're like, fine. We can't listen to it anymore. And they do. And you know, then they come back to me and say, I didn't know this was going to be so much about me and so much within my control. I thought you were going to change my child. And no, it starts with changing you, which then not only helps your parenting, but it helps every single aspect of your life. So with that amazing list of experts, I'm going to ask you, like, what was the one thing that if you had to say, if somebody said, I just need one sentence or one piece of advice right now, what is the biggest thing that you could tell me from all of those people? What would you say that could be? And I know that's a very difficult question and you might answer differently tomorrow. So
I don't think it's a difficult question at all. It was a journey to arrive at the answer. But for me, I would say connection is the key. And that might seem simplistic. And I was having a conversation earlier on today and I said, it's really important that we have key conversations around word connection because it's becoming a buzzword. Mm-hmm. And when we take core concepts and we turn it into a buzzword, a lot of times we lose the meaning and the true value in it. So for me, connection is about tapping in to the highest version of yourself, to that, what I almost like to call your default state, because I think we have a default state, a way of being. Like if you look at a newborn baby, you just see them just bursting with innocence and love, and it's just oozing out of them. For me, that's our default state. And everything else is a movement away from that because we're holding on to pain. And so if we can find the path to connection, both to ourselves and then to each other and to our planet, I think that's the key to resolving a lot of the issues that we're facing.
Wow. And who first introduced you to that deep, deep, deep concept of connection? Not in this, I see what you're saying. A lot of people say connection over correction. And, you know, they're great things, mantras to have in your head, but you really need to know the deep introspective way that you connect to yourself in your truest form is what you're saying. And then you can connect to others. But who first introduced that to you?
I think that's probably a more difficult question to answer. And that's because my own awareness and insight of what connection was grew over time. Mm. So in the very beginning, when I first learned about connection, my aha moment was recognizing that being together didn't equal connection. So I come from a huge extended family and we spent a lot of time together. Like other families think we're weird, but we enjoy being together. And I grew up thinking that meant we were connected. And so it was a journey for me to kind of peel that back and recognize that being in the same space, proximity, even enjoying each other's company isn't equal to connection. And that there needs to be a greater understanding of your own being first. Because without the ability to connect to yourself, you can't connect to another really, because you don't know, you don't have the thread. You can't give what you don't have, in essence. And so I think from each expert, it took me a little deeper and a little deeper. So it would be unfair for me to point one out and say that was the first person, because I think each person kind of paved the way for my journey to go a little deep and help me understand the concept of connection more.
Wow. That's really important. I do some presentations for working parents, And when I'm talking to companies and they say, well, we don't want the other people who aren't parents to feel like, you know, they're not getting this benefit. And I laugh because really my presentation starts with all of kind of what you said is, you know, I try to help working parents communicate, but they can't communicate what their needs are if they don't even know who they are. So I start at that very basic level, and it's universally applicable to parents or non-parents alike, right? So even to connect in the workplace to each other, and then certainly go home and connect to your children or whomever it is that you need to connect to, you need to know, oh, why do I feel this way? Why do I get triggered by this? Where did that come from? And once you start to have that understanding, that's when you can truly be connected. So I love how you know that that's such an, you know, the most important basic thing. What surprised you the most about one of the experts that you, you know, interviewed? Was there anything that caught you off guard, either in a good or a bad way?
I think it was really not about the expert, but about where I was in my journey. So I remember the first time I stumbled across Byron Katie's work. It was radical for me to think that I didn't have to believe my thoughts. Like, I was like, of course, they're mine. They must be true. and so at that time, that's quite a few years ago now. But at that time, that was radical for me. And that was a shift in my perspective and in my understanding of myself. I think Dan Siegel also took me a little deeper in terms of, because his science is so beautiful, right? There's just this blend of all different varieties and variations of science all coming together. And what that allowed me to really see was that our entire being is our tool for connection, both to ourselves and to each other. So the fact that when you laugh, that produces different hormones in your body versus when you cry, that you feel a particular way when you hug. So sometimes we think that to get, like if you're trying to think about grit or resilience, you think about using the power of your mind and you forget that all of it is connected. So I may not have the full control over my mind in this moment, but I've got my body. And I could use my body to help me kind of regain the balance I need and then merge the use of my mind and body. And I think what he allowed me to really open the door to is, how are we communicating using everything, using our words, our body language, our tone of voice, the smiles, the twinkle in the eyes, how are we using all of it to be able to create connection or disconnection every moment, whether that's within or inter, yeah? So whether you're talking to a child or a colleague or a spouse, how are we using our bodies? And if we could learn to use our bodies differently, like we're learning a language, yeah? So if we could learn to use all of the tools, our mind, our voice, the words, our body language, if we could use all of it like we had a new bag of tools to communicate, could that help us in all of those different scenarios we're in, whether it's family life or work life, to be able to create an environment where the people around us find it easier to be connected to themselves, so that as a team, we're all coming to the table, bringing the best of who we are to solve the problems that we're facing.
That is just something else, Nicole. I mean, I want to be in your energy zone because it's just all so great. Like, I love that you're actually taking it to the next level of helping someone else be connected to themselves, not just you, but to themselves because of your energy. I just love it. It's funny, Dan Siegel really taps into my curiosity because he's science-based, and that isn't something that I normally think of, but my husband really, really listens to Dan Siegel, and he, you know, is an engineer by, you know, profession. So I think that that's why he can hear his message, where someone who's a little more esoteric, my husband can't even connect to. But from watching my husband, I've learned to connect to Dan Siegel. And I think it's very important in a coaching aspect to be able to tell the why. So I think that Dan has this awareness that helps people who, and so I have to think like he does and be able to explain like he does because everybody thinks differently. So if I'm going to help a science-minded person, I have to tell them the science. And, you know, right now in this COVID state, anxiety is what everybody's talking about because we're at an all-time high. And I heard Lisa Damore, who's another expert, talk about the fact that years ago, you know, she's a psychologist and she didn't even believe in breathing because she was like, what is this woo-woo stuff with breathing? Yeah, take deep breaths, whatever. And then she learned and then taught when you are in an anxious-ridden state, in a state of fight or flight, your brain is sending the message to your lungs to constrict. And so when you do the square breathing exercise, you're actually hijacking that message and opening up your lungs so that it goes back to the brain and says, no, we're okay. We're not in this state of fight or flight. So I thought that was really interesting because I do square breathing in some of my workshops. And so to say to somebody who's like, what is this? We're going to hold in for four and breathe out for four, you know, and they need to know the why behind it. And I think that's very important. As far as anxiety is concerned, you had an expert on that I watched talk about self-compassion. And I was very interested. It was Kristen Neff.
Yes.
Because I've been tying some of this angst-ridden state to you're going to exacerbate it and spiral unless you can pause and have a little space for self-compassion. And what I love that she gave the definition to you, but of passion and self-compassion, because I think some people don't get it. Some people don't understand the difference between self-care and self-compassion, and it's really compassion, but for yourself. And so when you put it that way, it's much more understandable. But there are three steps that I learned about self-compassion that if you are failing in a moment, and we all have those things, maybe brought on by anxiety, let's say you have stage fright, you could say to yourself, you idiot, oh my God, what are you doing? Get up, people are waiting to hear you. Or you can exercise some self-compassion. And she described it, and I heard it described kind of in a three-step process. Number one, acknowledging, wow, look at me. Kind of like Byron Katie, like, I don't believe that I'm an idiot, or I don't believe that I'm incapable of doing this presentation, but it's happening right now. I'm frozen on stage. And then number two, talking to yourself like you would a friend. It's okay. You'll get through it. You know, this has happened to other people. And then the third step is knowing that universally it has happened to other people. And what people don't understand is you get out of that anxiety and get out of that perhaps stage fright more quickly when you exercise self-compassion. But what Kristen took a step further was tying self-compassion to resilience and a growth mindset. And so I thought, wow, when you look at the process of tying self-compassion to so many different aspects of what we need right now in our society because of what's going on. And we need it in general. But I thought that that was just really brilliant. And I loved how she explained it and how you interviewed her in that.
I'll tell you how it integrates in my mind. So, and for listeners, I don't want you to think I'm a broken record with the word connection, but it's, as I said, it's the key, right? So for me, when you talk about flight or fright or freeze, it's a state that for me is the trigger that puts you into a state of disconnection. But when you boil it down, what it really is do I feel safe or not? That's it. And when I feel safe, I have access to fluffy things. When you feel safe, your body says, okay, now it's time for growth and repair of cells. And this is the time where you can daydream and vision, right? When you're in a state of feeling that you're unsafe, your body thinks that's a waste of energy and time. We don't have time for that. I have to make sure that your vision is on point, your hearing is on point. Digestion, waste of time, because we don't even know if you're going to live to eat. And we think it's funny because we think we're not running from tigers and lions. Yeah, we live in a different world, but our DNA is made up in exactly the same way. So your boss saying, I need to talk to you, and you don't know why, produces the same feelings as if you were running from a lion or a tiger. So really, and for me, what brings it home is when you think of the parent-child dynamic. So think of a parent yelling at a child or standing over a child in a very authoritative way. And then ask, does that invite an environment of safety or feelings of being unsafe? And when we're safe, we have the opportunity to connect ourselves and access all of the good, juicy stuff. So that's why self-compassion is linked back to resilience. Because when you soothe yourself, you help yourself feel safe in a space that a couple seconds ago didn't feel safe. And now that you feel safe, you drop to that space where you have the opportunity to connect. And from there, you get your grit. From there, you know, I can do this. From there, you know, I have the power. I can change. I can create. And that's why you have access to grit and resilience compared to when you don't have that self-soothing or anyone else to help you set up the environment to help you feel safe.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And when you feel safe, I love that you said you can access fluff. Yeah. And even in a good sense, so I think it was Eve Rodsky taught me, when emotion is high, cognition is low. So when you're a parent, an authoritative parent standing over a child trying to teach them a lesson, they can't even hear you. They can't get it. But that's even true for good things, right? How many times have you heard, oh, I won an award and I don't even remember walking up to get the award because, you know, your emotion is high, so cognition is low. You can't even engage your memory. So I think that's such a great way that you put it, that when you feel safe, you have access to fluff, you have access to growth and resilience, and you can continue learning. So that is that tie to what Kristen was talking about, self-compassion into resilience and a growth mindset, which is really all we're supposed to be doing is growing, right? So, I mean, Nicole, I just think you're so brilliant, and you've learned so much from the experts, and you're able to express it so in such a way that it's easy to comprehend and it's easy to then even act upon. So I appreciate so much how you boil it down and express it, because I think that then it makes more people have access to it. So you've said so much today, and I just want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us, and thank you for sharing your light with the world, really, the people that you bring together in a networking sense and then send out is just so incredibly helpful and imperative for all of us. So I want to thank you for doing what you do with Empowered Kids TV.
Oh, thank you so much, Kara. It's a journey of love. And it just brings me joy and light to know that as I journey along my own parenting journey and stumble and fall and find the people with the answers, that I can share it and help other families kind of get up and brush their knees off and keep going.
Yes. And in fact, you've also found another way to share it, which is through your most recent parenting guidebook. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So we've just launched the Behavior Guide for Little Kids. And it's a kind of very unique, one-of-a-kind Q&A book for all of the common challenges that parents of kids 2 to 7 face. So we're talking about, I don't want to get dressed in the morning, to I don't want to sleep at night, and everything in the middle, right? And the reason I did it was, so like everybody else, I was trying to figure out how can I continue to serve during the pandemic. Now that I know parents need absolutely more support, what can I do? And what I realized was, again, tying the whole conversation with what I learned from Dan about using our entire bodies as tools for connection, was that now that parents were really stressed out, the spotlight was being shown on their inability to use their tools with the intention of connecting. So it was, I'm going to use my tools to get my way and to get what I want done. But the result of that was more power struggles and more conflict. And at a time when we actually need the opposite within our families. So the guidebook was designed to really walk parents through how to communicate in some of those really common, typical, and I would say high pressure situations for parents. I need to get out the door and my little one doesn't want to put shoes on, or I don't like this trouser you picked out for me. That's the time when you want to kind of rip your hair out. So how do you communicate? And the guidebook is linked to some additional resources about how we begin to use our tool set, our entire being, to be able to intentionally communicate, to connect.
It's brilliant. And I was very honored to be a part of it. And I describe it to people as, you know, we always say, and I start many of my sessions and my presentations with there is no manual for parenting, because parenting is so individual and so different. But here you have come up with a manual for parenting. So now I have to change my wording.
I would say don't change it. So, and that's why I call this the guidebook.
Yes.
I really believe that the manual is our individual intuition. And I think it's given to us because every child comes to us with a unique mission, and it's very different, the guidance that they need. So while I'm happy to call this a guidebook because it's given a guide for those, I don't want to take away from the power of what the true manual is.
Yes. Yes, it is a guidebook, but I love the examples that it gives. And what I like about it is, of course, you have to use your intuition and use, you know, you have to get to know that child so that you can use those tools to best address the needs of that child, right? But I think that the guidebook provides real life examples, and not necessarily you have to implement this in the exact way that the expert said, but it might spark an idea of how you can make an analogy and make it applicable to your situation. So thank you so much for doing that. And thank you so much for being our guest here. Nicole, it's been a pleasure, and I just really appreciate it. And I'm going to put some links here at Mindfulness at Work so people can find Empowered Kids TV, and that they can find you, and they can also have access to the guidebook. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Mindfulness at Work. If you felt inspired by our conversation, we hope you'll share our podcast with your friends and colleagues.